Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday. Just a footnote to last hour when we talked about dogs. We do have some absolutely beautiful pictures on our Facebook page of dogs. You can just spend the next half hour looking at those dogs, including my dog, who's a beauty, ill-behaved, but a beautiful dog. And so go to the Kathleen Dunn Show and you can look at dogs. All right, now we're going to talk about an equally fascinating topic, and that's what's going on in the skies. I love these programs. The largest meteor to hit the Earth in more than a century, and do you know the last one fell almost in the same place, in Siberia? Why did that happen? We'll talk about a new study suggesting significant amounts of water in moon rock, and this plan to put robots to do never thought of before scientific discoveries on the moon. We'll talk about that. Yesterday was the birthday of Copernicus, a very important person in history. So we discuss all of that this hour of our program with Alan Pesch. Alan is director and our friend of the Barlow Planetarium in Menasha. They offer public programming every day of the week except Mondays, and they're going to have a family astronomy night this Saturday, which we'll hear about later this hour. We have much to talk about with Alan, who really knows what's going on in space, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for him as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 for you to join our space conversation. Hello, Alan.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Thank you ever so much for being with us, and what a time we've had. Let's start with this story, which made quite a splash, as did the meteor, this Russian meteor. This could have been a really tragic event, couldn't it?
Well, the footage in Russia coming out of all the dash cams was just amazing.
Yes.
And it's very, very similar to what you mentioned, what happened the century before, back in 1908 with the Tunguska explosion that happened in northern Siberia. So I think something's up for Russia right now. I'm not quite sure.
Well, is there some reason? I wondered about that when I read the last one was in almost the same spot. What are the chances of that happening?
Well, I hate to use this word astronomical.
But you will.
I will. It really, the two events can't be correlated in any way. I think the Tunguska event was probably a more direct blow, which caused nearly 1,000 square miles of woods to be flattened.
Oh, my.
And of course, it happened in Siberia. So as far as I, from my research, there were no deaths back in 1908, mainly because it was Siberia. But if you look at about 1,000 square miles, you're looking at about Madison. I mean, that's about how big that area was, and there were no meteorites left in the Tunguska event. We think that the rock exploded above the Earth's surface, and the shock wave is what came down and flattened all.
Remarkable. How many pieces of this meteor have been able to be picked up? Any? Are people searching all over the area?
Well, and something that's this popular and this much in the news, those pieces can become very expensive.
Oh.
Because they're tied to such an amazing event. I've heard reports that they found 50 or so of the fragments on the bottom of a lake, and they were sent to a university in Russia for verification of what kind of meteorite there was, what it was. And frankly, the biggest thing about this is there's a possibility that the meteorites can be not very, very special. However, because of the event, they are special. There was a great meteor hit up in the eastern United States that hit a Chevy Malibu, whose blue book value was like $50. It went to $50,000.
Oh my gosh!
After
Alan.
It got hit by a meteor. So if you have a car and want to get a little extra value out of it, try to get it hit by a meteor.
Right, right. Yeah, we'll all try to do that. And the reason why this came out of the blue is because it was coming out of the blue. It was coming during a daytime. Is that why nobody saw this coming?
Well, this is a really small rock. This thing is only about 50 feet across. So
goodness.
Relatively small. I'm sorry. Yes, about that size. So we're looking at something that came in at a very shallow angle. When we see that explosion on all the videotape footage that we got from Russia, it's still probably in excess of 30 miles up. So about six times higher than a commercial airliner. And then it broke apart, which is typical, and then they watched the track and all that footage from around from the video. People were able to see, from this location we saw it here, from this location we saw it here, and then we can triangulate it, and which led them to a lake in Russia that had a hole in it.
Hmm. Yeah.
And from there they started doing some searching for it, and I mean the destruction was amazing. There's some great estimates of fantastic numbers on this rock. It was going 40,000 miles an hour.
Goodness gracious.
Twice as fast as a space shuttle when it reenters. It damaged 4,000 buildings as an estimate. Its explosion was 30 times more powerful than Hiroshima. The mass of the meteorite itself is about the same mass as two St. Louis arches.
Whew. Now, I read, tell me if this is correct, Alan, that the Earth is regularly coming into contact with debris like this. The Earth intercepts, I read, 80 tons. That's a lot. 80 tons of meteoric material per day. A basketball-sized object hits Earth on average once per day, and a car-sized one every month or two. Where are they going? Where are they hitting?
Well, first of all, if they happen in the daytime, chances are we're not going to see that happening. So right there, half of our day is taken out by not see these things. There's some wonderful experiments that we've done with students that after a popular meteor shower, you can actually go out and capture the water coming out of your eaves.
Huh.
And then analyze all that grit, and you'd be surprised on how many micrometeors you'll find after a meteor shower that come out of the atmosphere thanks to the rain. And yeah, we are collecting a lot of this material, not huge stuff. I mean, when we have something like in Russia that happened in the daytime, that thing got as bright as the sun at its brightest.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the most amazing footage, I love the footage where you can actually see it, but there's some like tower cams that are looking down at a traffic circle, and in daylight,
yes,
you can see the shadows.
Yes. That was a remarkable footage.
And people would just have to, I mean, I also like the one where it seems like the police car is chasing it. But but you have to wonder that if you're not experienced with this, and even if you are, there's a lot of other things you're thinking about other than a space rock coming in.
Right, exactly. What were people thinking, I wonder? What? It must have just thrown people for a loop.
And airplane accident, something.
Right.
And that sort of stuff happens. And, I mean, you're looking at 1,200 people that were injured, approximately, maybe a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are still hospitalized, but everything's minor. But, boy, I mean, you think about the amount of glass that was broken.
Right.
I mean, it was just amazing. And that's going to take, they're estimating this at around $33 million in damage.
Oof. Alan Pesch is our guest this hour, director of the Barlow Planetarium in Menasha, which is a terrific place, well worth your visit, great programs. We're talking space this hour and starting, of course, with this meteor that hit. NASA evidently is the worldwide leader in tracking large asteroids, but how many are they missing here? And there have been calls for us to try and intercept them in some way. I don't know how the heck you would do that, but do we need to do something like that? Well, you can call us if you'd like. We're going to talk about other things, too, but our minds are on this because of the footage and how dramatic this was. Here's our phone number for on-air, 800-486-8655, and you can call in with your questions. Alan Pesch is our guest, director of the Barlow Planetarium at UW Fox Valley. We'll get back to our conversation in a moment. First, we need to take just a few minutes to ask for your support of the programs that you enjoy. You know, you do help pay the bills at Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is our winter membership drive. John Munson is with me. We're asking you to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now to make a gift in support of the programs that you count on.
What a great hour we had last hour.
We did.
Man, we made our $1,000 match, and we had a goal of 45 pledges, and we heard from 51 of you.
Wonderful.
All right. Well, that was last hour.
Oh.
So, yeah, we got to bask in our success for all of about 30 seconds. Now we have a new goal, and we need to get another 45 pledges. So help us meet this goal by making a contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. The programs you enjoy, and I want to say this too, not only the programs you enjoy, but the programs we enjoy bringing to
yes,
you.
We do.
We are here for the same reason you
are.
We're crazy. We love public radio as much as you do. You're still listening. This is a pledge drive. Well, we're here because we love this as much as you do. And I just want you to know that we're just as crazy about public radio as you are. We love coming to work every day. Well, these programs will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio, and it's thanks to your gift.
You know, you can get headlines, you can get sound bites, you can get people telling you what to think in other places. But where do you go for in-depth discussion?
Let me think about that and get
Won't
back in.
Won't you, please?
Wait, no,
yes.
I get it. Oh, no, it's the Ideas Network, of course. And you had the answer before I did. you don't just get a 20-second clip or a few minutes of back and forth. You get plenty of time to develop ideas. You get to ask questions. WPR is a great source of in-depth information. Your support right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is what makes it possible.
So here's how you do it. It takes 2 minutes of your time. You say your name, contact information, how much you would like to give, and how you would like to pay. And you may want to consider using a credit card because it saves time and postage and paper, and it puts your money to work right away. No matter how you choose to give or how much, please take the next 2 minutes to make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, WPR truly is your radio station. We work very hard to create and produce programs mm-hmm. with your interests in mind. We aim to serve you, and we always aim to exceed your expectations.
We do think about your interests, and you're always in our thoughts during our daily work. WPR is your station because your help makes it possible. So help out now by donating at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, we all like to feel good. I mean, I like to feel good. I know Kathleen likes to feel
good.
Sure do. Well, here's a way to make yourself not just feel good, but extra good. You can feel extra good when you donate to WPR this pledge drive. Give $10 a month or more. And as your thank you gift, 40 meals will be provided to those in need through area food banks all over the state of Wisconsin. Just choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift when you pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's fundraising time. Maybe we've worn you down. Well, if you finally decided to give, but still undecided about how much to give, I'm Scott Simon from NPR News. We have a suggestion. Why don't you think about becoming a sustaining giver? Just $10 a month. It's billed to your credit card. It renews automatically. But you can stop anytime you want. We hope you won't. Then no matter when you tune into your station, you know that you're doing your part. So join as a sustaining supporter of your station today. Just $10 a month. Here's how.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with John Munson, and we're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your gift might be $5 or $10 or maybe $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount. At WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, there are a lot of reasons why Wisconsin Public Radio listeners become Wisconsin Public Radio contributors. Well, one of them is that they want to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're here today, too. We want to make a difference. Giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is one way to make a difference and to help your local community.
Your pledge today really not only pays for the programs you listen to, it also gives others the chance to discover Wisconsin Public Radio, and that's a good discovery. So please give at WPR.org. Again, the number is 888-202-2552.
Now, if you already renew by mail or make ongoing monthly transfers from your bank account, well, thank you. Listeners who renew and monthly sustainers are the backbone of WPR.
If you haven't given yet, join thousands of other wonderful WPR members by donating at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What does making a pledge mean? Well, a pledge is a promise. We promise to bring you great shows every day. We pledge to do that, your pledge, to support them with a contribution in any amount.
We also promise that when you help to pay the cost of this station, and I think that our past record will bear this out, we'll make sure that there's something interesting for you to listen to. That's our pledge. Now, make yours. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We need 42 more pledges in the next 38 minutes or so in order to make our goal for this hour. Help out now. Be the next to make a pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you're not a sustainer, think about becoming one right now. It's easy to set up the ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. No, I'm sorry.
Is this this is the I lead, you lead waltz, I think, is what we're doing here now.
It's all yours.
Sorry, I'm just, I put the script in front of me, I read. When you give $120, that's just 10 bucks a month, 30 cents a day, you can get our Food for 40 thank you gift and provide meals to those facing hunger in your area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a great way to do two good things at the same time with your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Constance from Heartland sums it all up. My life is enriched and expanded because of WPR.
Can't say it better than that.
That's it.
WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Alan Pesch is our guest this hour, director of the Barlow Planetarium in Menasha. We're talking about that Russian meteor. Our conversation will expand as we carry on, but it was such a huge event. There are several of you who would like to speak about that. Here is our phone number for on air. Join us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Ray in Milwaukee is our first caller, Alan. Hi, Ray.
Good morning. First, I want to thank you for combining your fundraiser with Food for Poor Folks. It's just a beautiful thing, and please try to do it every fundraiser.
Thank
it's just
you, Ray.
Great. Okay, I want to go back to this meteorite story. That was the most unbelievable thing I have seen in quite a while, and especially since that day the big one was passing within 15 minutes of us, which would have meant to me that the Mayan calendar was only off by about a month and 15 minutes. But I would like to talk about a meteorite at the heart of the Muslim religion, and I don't know if many people know this story. Now, an Algerian neighbor of mine told me the story originally, and I wondered this morning if I could find it here in the book, and I just did find two small pieces of this story. When the Muslims go to Hajj every year at Mecca, they circle around a giant pillar, and apparently what's in that pillar is a meteorite. And the story, let me read just a small amount of this. The story is supposed to begin with a burning black boulder crashing into the Arabian desert, melting the sand around into glass. Now, depending on who's telling the story, the molten black boulder was either a meteorite or a fiery gift from Archangel Gabriel. Now, apparently it had been put into a shrine 3,000 years ago. And then some other small things had happened, and Abraham and his son Ishmael had to erect a new and sturdier shrine called the Kaaba to house the holy boulder. I guess this is now in Mecca. And when they finished, Abraham climbed to the ridge above Mecca. Four times he issued a bird call, and four times a bird came and perched on his shoulder. And at God's command, Abraham chopped up each bird and flung the pieces off the ridge. Each time the pieces reunited and the bird flew back to Abraham and perched on his shoulder. And then Abraham descended from the ridge to the Kaaba, where he was met by Gabriel, who instructed Abraham and Ishmael in the proper way to worship this gift and to glorify God. He showed them how to throw stones each of the four directions and to wash themselves ritually, wear simple white clothes, and circle the Kaaba seven times. This is the same thing that millions of people are doing to this very day, and it's all circling around a meteorite.
Oh, that's fascinating. Alan, do you know of this story?
I do not, and I like hearing these stories because there's sometimes some scientific inaccuracies that come out of them. And one of those things, and we can actually see this in Tunguska, and even in this event that occurred here, and even in the meteorite fall that occurred up east that hit the 1981 Chevy Malibu, a lot of people think that these meteorites come down, and when they hit the ground, they're hot and they can do a bunch of things. It turns out that they have gone through their highest heating at about tens of miles up, and they spend the next several minutes coming down through super, super, super cold air, colder than we even have in Wisconsin. And when they hit the ground, they're typically, from everybody who's been close to one, usually not even warm anymore. So I really enjoy looking at these stories and looking at their value of how they can bring everybody together in a religion. But sometimes the science gets a little concerned, a little suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And as Ray said, on that same day, just after this occurred, at about 1:30 in the afternoon, we had the closest predicted approach of an asteroid that passed by us. And that thing came so close, it actually got within 17,000 miles of Earth. We knew about it for a year. And that actually came within our communication satellite ring. It was so close.
Ooh.
And that was a large, much larger object, not huge, but still large. And I like the science that we knew about this for a year. However, here we have this rock coming in over Russia that we had no
idea. Caught us totally by surprise. It was quite a day, quite a day. A couple more questions. One is, you hear some people saying that we need to do something about this. I don't know what the heck you would do about it. Is there a way to divert the meteors or shoot them down? Should we even be concerned about that? Or is it just what happens when you live in the universe?
Well, we have, and I like how this is put, that we do not know of anything that's on a collision course with us now. However, not knowing doesn't mean it's not possible, because we just got hit by a small object now. We just got hit by a similar object 100 years ago in 1908. We are tracking these things. We call these near-Earth objects, and we're always concerned when they get too close to us, and then we start doing their orbits. But there has to be something we can do, or at least be aware. Again, it's pretty amazing that this huge explosion in Russia did not fatally injure anybody.
It is amazing. Thank goodness for that, but it is amazing. Ray, thanks for the call. Our number, by the way, is 800-486-8655. Irv in Boscobel. Hi, Irv.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Irv.
Hi. I was watching the evening news last night on Channel 15, NBC, I think, and they were showing clips of this thing. And I didn't catch the commentary, but I saw on the screen, it showed a chunk of this thing, or I assumed it was a chunk of this thing, about half the size of a car, and it hit a car on the road and just totaled it. And I haven't heard anything about that since, or I just wondered if you guys were aware of that.
I have not heard that or seen anything like that. And, in fact, the reports that we've been getting out for now, well, almost a half a week now, I haven't seen anything like that. There was a incident in France where I think it was the first ever modern person getting hit by a meteorite.
Hmm.
It actually came in through their window of their car. Broke the steering wheel, I think broke a couple fingers on the driver's hands, and bounced into the back seat. If you go to the Smithsonian, you can actually go to the Air and Space Museum and see the first ever that we know rock that ever hit a person from space. And this kind of helps you believe the whole that it's not hot. The rock came in through her roof in the daytime and bounced off of her when she was napping.
Oh my gosh!
And I guess you're kind of pre-disastered at that point. You're kind of good for the rest of your life if you've been hit by a meteor and nothing
and
happened.
Survived. Yeah, thanks very much, Irv, for the call. If you can find out more about that, let us know. How much can we learn? How closely studied are these meteors by scientists? How much do they teach us about, I don't know, the origin of the universe or about space?
More importantly, Kathleen, it teaches us about the origin of the solar system.
Oh.
We are looking at rocks, and in fact, we have some comets coming in this year. Pan Stars, which is going to be visible in our skies in March, and also Ison, which is going to be later in the year. And we think these are pretty new, probably first ever comets into the inner solar system. So we are looking at the building blocks of the solar system that have gone unused now for 4.5 billion years.
Woo.
So if we can get samples of this, whether it's through meteors or meteor showers, or sometimes even when Halley's Comet came by, we had a sample return mission that flew through the tail of the comet, we can get an idea what the chemical makeup of the early solar system was. And kind of like space fossils, and get an idea, because this is really literally primordial stuff that was out there and never got put into a planet using gravity like our planets did, and the outer planets and the asteroid belt and all this other stuff. So it's a great way for us to look at our big origins of the solar system of itself.
Mm-hmm. Irv, thanks so much for the call. Steve in Montreal, Wisconsin. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Yeah, this is I'm enjoying this conversation because near my hometown of Kentland, Indiana, which is just immediately east, about 14 miles of the Illinois state line and 100 miles south of Chicago, is an open pit limestone quarry, limestone mine, that according to a geologist that I had occasion to meet and be in a group with, and the local property owner, this limestone anomaly, the only one of its kind for miles and hundreds of miles, was formed because a meteorite or an asteroid or some large foreign body struck that spot in this farm country with such force it buckled up the substrata and thrust this limestone area up where it can be mined by open pit methods.
Woo.
I've overflown it. And there isn't any more limestone processed until you get south of Bedford, Indiana, which is about 250 miles south. I mean, there are no quarries of any kind in this area except for this one limestone quarry.
Alan, how do you explain it?
Well, I mean, we see evidence of these scars every place. Sometimes they're easy to find. Like the rock that passed us on Friday morning, if it would have hit Earth, not a global disaster, but if anybody's ever seen the Great Meteor Crater out in Arizona, we estimate that the 2012 DA14, if it would have impacted the Earth, would have made a crater roughly the size of the Great Meteor Crater, which is just a little bit less than a mile across. Now, that crater was formed 50,000 years ago. When we go back in time and using some really cool methods, we can find the Chicxulub impact crater in the Yucatan. And we think that is the crater that happened around the time that the dinosaurs start going out. And could have been the thing and that was a huge impact. And you can go around and you can actually see lakes. In fact, in Tunguska, there is this small little bowl-shaped lake right in the middle of the flattened woods that were there. And we think that is the sole impact crater of the energy of the Tunguska event in 1908.
Fascinating. More phone calls in a moment. We are kind of stuck on, but it's understandable because it was such an event, meteors, but yesterday was Copernicus's birthday, and he had a big influence on things, and people didn't respect his knowledge. Water on the moon. Conventional wisdom has been that the moon has changed a little over the years, but there is a great deal of information now about a new idea about lunar formation. And there's going to be this robot razor that they're putting together right now that's going to do some remarkable things, extracting water from the moon and the things that need to take place before human beings can go there again and spend some time. Is that a worthwhile thing? So join our conversation, 800-486-8655. Alan Pesch, director of the Barlow Planetarium, a treasure here in Wisconsin. It's in Menasha. I'm Kathleen Dunn. John Munson joining me in our studios in Milwaukee. And this is also the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. And our goal is to keep bringing you discussions with people like Alan Pesch. Listener contributions really help make that happen. Your gift of any amount right now will make a big difference as we raise the money that we need to keep these conversations going. So please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hey, John.
Hey, we need 39 pledges in the next 22 minutes or so to help make our goal for this hour. And thank you so much if you've already given, and especially to the two people who gave for the very first time this hour. Well, if you haven't given yet, please help us stay on track by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I think you know that those of us who put together these hours of radio from 9 to 11 are really committed to bringing quality radio to you. Fascinating conversations. This space material is just really interesting, isn't it? We do this Monday through Thursday. We talk about books and history and politics and sports and dogs, social issues, education, meteors. We're here for you with important topics and some fun topics as well, but we can't do it without your support. Listener contributions make up 40% of our budget, and it's why we are asking for your gift right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I don't think we could really make it much easier. All we need is your name, contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay it.
Save time and money and use a credit card if you can, or better yet, start automatic sustaining donations directly from your bank account. You choose how to give, then you do it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, you may be thinking that your tax dollars, federal and state, already support WPR. And you're right, they do. And we thank you for that.
For you to get the quality and the variety of programs that you're used to on WPR, we also need contributions from individual listeners. Listener support, really the single biggest piece of our budget pie, meaning that we cannot do this without you. Because WPR matters to you, make a personal contribution to pay for the radio programs that you listen to. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Rather than getting a book or a DVD as a thank you gift, you can do something different this drive. Give $10 a month or more and select Food for 40 as your thank you gift. Now, here's what will happen when you do that. We'll pass on what we would normally spend on that book or DVD to a Wisconsin food bank in your area, wherever you live in the state of Wisconsin. Your gift will be enough to feed 40 people. Please pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I think the main thing for me that Wisconsin Public Radio is just this comforting thing, as well as the information in the news. It's something that I start with my day with and I end my day with, and I just find so much pleasure in listening to the stories that are told, and really appreciate the in-depth way that the news is told, that it's not just a headline. There's much more to it, and I really feel like I get an understanding of the issues of the day from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support. I'm Kathleen Dunn with John Munson, and we want to thank you in advance for your gift of Well, $5, $10, $30 a month, whatever amount is right for you, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Still need those 39 more pledges in the next 20 minutes or so, and your pledge right now could be, well, it could be the next pledge, and it helps to pay for fascinating discussions like this one we're having this hour in the Kathleen Dunn program, and programs you count on all year long. You turn on the radio, you expect us to be there, and we are. Thank you so much if you've already given, and if you haven't, why wait? Great time to do it. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You may want to consider a sustaining membership to WPR. Once you set up a comfortable monthly giving amount from your bank or your credit card, your support will go right to work toward the programming that you appreciate.
Because you're so, I can't even say sustaining. You're sustaining. I should maybe get out of radio. I can't even read the word sustaining.
No.
Yeah, because your sustaining donation automatically renews each year, you won't get renewal mailings and you'll listen guilt-free during pledge drives. Can't you just feel the relief already? Oh, boy. Become a sustainer right now with a gift of $5, $10, $15 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You might say we work on the honor system. Mm-hmm. You don't have to pay for it, but think about what you would pay if you had to. Would you pay $5 a month or $10 or maybe a dollar a day?
Well, whatever the amount, you decide. Then go to WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. We will use your gift, we promise, to support the programs you hear every day on this station. Contribute right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we're kind of stuck at 39 pledges. We would like to get 39 pledges in how many minutes? 20 minutes?
16, 15.
16? Well, you got to do it now, then. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember, if you're not already a sustainer, now's a great time to become one. It's easy to set up ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And a sustaining membership is convenient. Plus, it provides reliable funding for WPR.
And as John has told you about, and one listener called and thanked us for doing this, and I agree, it's so worth while. When you give $120, that's $10 a month, you can get our Food for 40 thank you gift and provide meals to those who are facing hunger in your area. So it's a great way to do two good things at once with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks to Sharon and Charles from Madison. I love what they said about you enrich our lives and the life of the community in which we live. Thank you, Sharon and Charles, for your contributions. Join them. Be the next person to make a contribution in support of things that enrich your life and the life of your community at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you, John Munson.
Thank you. You're welcome.
We're talking space this hour with Alan Pesch, director of the Barlow Planetarium in Menasha. We spent a lot of time talking about the meteor, and I know several of you have calls related to that. We also want to talk about Copernicus and his birthday yesterday, water on the moon, and this really remarkable mission that I don't think many people know about, to get a robot to extract water from the moon. It's called the Robot Razor, and we'll hear about that as we continue. And also what to look for in the night sky. 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation with Alan Pesch is our guest. We will take phone calls on the meteor, but just let's move quickly on to a couple other topics. First, a belated happy birthday to, actually, I don't know if I've ever wished him a happy birthday, Nicholas Copernicus, who was the man who taught us that the Earth revolves around the sun and not the other way around. You probably wondered what Google's homepage was yesterday, and it was a tribute to this pioneering Renaissance astronomer. And people didn't believe him, did they, Alan?
Well, and Kepler was in a weird position where he worked in the church. And he understood about the solar system and how it was going to change, but he was so concerned about what he was finding in his observations that he didn't publish his book until the year of his death. And he really, he was, we like to throw around this Renaissance man. I mean, he was a true intellectual, from law to medical to astronomy to math, physics. He was one of the shoulders that Newton describes when he says, if I have seen further, it was by standing on the shoulders of giants. And Newton was paying homage to Galileo, Copernicus, the early Egyptian astronomers, who all built these buildings or these stepping stones up to a point where we can travel in space today. Like I love to tell students, I go, Newton was so impressive that when he couldn't figure out how to explain something because the math didn't exist, he invented the math.
Why do people not want to believe him? Why do they vilify him?
Well, I think when we look at religion, and that is a common theme, because we like to think of these scientists and this separation between people who have religious beliefs in science. And when we go back to these great thinkers like Copernicus, whose family was involved in the church, they were looking at different things and understanding that what they were trying to explain was really different than the teachings of the day. Even Galileo, whose both of his daughters went to convent, they were both nuns, and here he was explaining stuff and had a really good relationship with the Vatican. And one of his contemporaries even said at during Galileo's time that the Bible is a book on how one goes to heaven, not how heaven goes. And it's just this great, great, great message of, and Galileo was trying to solve these problems, and they all built on the knowledge of the people coming before them to expand our knowledge to really great areas. The other anniversary we should talk about is on Monday. It was the 83rd anniversary of the discovery of Pluto.
Oh, well, I missed that one. It's always something, isn't it, Alan? Always
well,
something.
Yeah, and when we look at Pluto, we've known about it for 83 years, and it hasn't even gone one-third of the way around the sun yet.
Poor
it's
Pluto.
So far away.
Poor Pluto. Yeah, let's go to Joe in Brooklyn. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Well, this is a really interesting conversation, especially in light of that meteor that just struck in Russia.
Right.
And that brings up a question I had was, is it true that an asteroid, a meteor, and a meteorite are really essentially the same thing? Like, an asteroid is a big piece of rock going through space, and then when it comes into our atmosphere, it becomes a meteorite, and then when it actually strikes the Earth, then it becomes, a meteor when it's going through the atmosphere, and then it becomes a meteorite when it actually strikes the Earth.
Joe, that's a great question, and it all comes down to nomenclature of what is this and where is it and how is it. What we try to do, especially when we look at the meteorite family or the meteor area, if it's small and in space, we kind of call it a meteoroid. When it hits our atmosphere, you're right, and it starts to streak, that's what is called a meteor, and a meteor does not become a meteorite, just like you said, until it hits the ground. Now, the real weird thing happens is what is the transition between a meteoroid in space and an asteroid in space? And it has something to do with size, but nobody's ever defined that size very accurately. So now we're getting into a Pluto thing, where how big is a planet? Well, we never said, so is Pluto a planet or not a planet? So then they classified and turned it into a dwarf planet. The really cool thing is most meteoroids that hit the Earth are grains of sand or smaller. The asteroid that hit, that passed us really close on Friday morning, that was much bigger and could cause damage. And a lot of times the meteoroids, when we talk about meteor showers, they are caused by comets that are basically constantly falling apart. And we can predict meteor showers as well as we can, because every time when Earth is in its orbit going in a certain direction at a certain time of the year, we are passing through that debris field, so we can tell if there's going to be meteors on these nights because we know we're passing through that comet's debris trail. So, yeah, I heard a lot of that on the news this weekend. Ooh, a meteor shower in Russia. No, that was just a really big meteor turning into a meteorite.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. Just briefly, we'll do a whole show on this down the road. I was not familiar with this. Sometimes you wonder if people who are doing exploration in space need better PR. But this whole question of how humans would sustain themselves if we sent them back to the moon and, as planned, sent them to Mars, there's this project called Robot Razor. Can you tell us about that?
Well, any time in NASA, we would prefer to send robots out instead of humans. Humans have an ability to problem solve that robots typically can't, but if we get our robots to listen to us really well, maybe some of that problem solving can be extended onto the robots.
Mm-hmm.
We even have a robot on the International Space Station right now that is learning how to manipulate stuff, and that they will be able to send this robot out to do spacewalks that are really cool for astronauts to do, but they're exceptionally dangerous and just full of things that, if this goes wrong, you're probably going to die.
Ooh.
So if we send a robot out, you know, if that thing goes wrong, we build a new robot.
Mm-hmm.
So sending stuff to sample and see what's really going on the moon is a lot safer. Even our Apollo astronauts, I heard some reports that all the Apollo astronaut spacesuits that were on the moon were probably within a day or two of failing.
Really?
Because of the grit of the sand on the lunar surface.
Ooh.
And it was getting into the joints, and the joints would have failed. All that stuff has to be figured out of not only being there, but how do we get there? And this is really exciting and hasn't made the news. A Russian cosmonaut, an American astronaut, actually one of the Kelly twins that are American astronauts, are going to do the first planned one-year mission on the International Space Station.
Ooh.
They're going to go up next spring and come back on the spring of 2015. So year in space to see how their bodies handle it,
uh-huh.
What kind of things they can do. Because the last thing you want to do is send somebody to Mars and after a several-month journey, have them get there and not be able to do anything.
Well, exactly. Yeah, Alan, thank you so much for being with us. Alan Pesch, say hello to him when you go to the Barlow Planetarium in Menasha. They have public programming every day of the week. We were there a couple of years ago and had just a fascinating afternoon and saw some great shows. And their Family Astronomy Night is this coming Saturday. Alan Pesch, our guest, will check in with him again because we like to talk about space. Who wouldn't like to talk about space after what happened in the last few days? I'm Kathleen Dunn with John Munson, and this is our winter membership drive. Think about how much you rely on our network for conversations like this. I love talking to Alan. It's enlightening, it's informative, and we rely on you to keep programs like this one on the air. So a gift of any amount makes a big difference in our ability to pay for these programs. Make a gift, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, that's the phrase that pays, Kathleen. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help pay for the programs you depend on. And we're looking for 35 more pledges in the next few minutes of this program. You can be the next at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What a great thing to have a conversation with Alan Pesch, who knows all about the universe. Director of Barlow Planetarium at UW Fox Valley, please take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that will work for you and then go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a terrific thing to do with just 2 minutes of your time. Just give us your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay it. And whether you call or pledge online, we keep your personal information safe. We don't share it with any other organization.
And we keep you connected to this world and beyond. Your gift supports the stories and the programs that we talk about every day. Please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
34 pledges. We're starting to gain on it now as we come to the end of the hour.
Oh, yeah, we
help
are.
Help us get to that goal of 45 pledges this hour. Be the next to make a pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you're not already a sustainer, become one right now. It's easy to set up the ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org. org or 888-202-2552. And that helps provide reliable funding for WPR.
And reliable is a pretty important word these days. Hey, and when you give $120, that's just $10 a month. It's right about 30 cents a day. You can get our Food for 40 thank you gift and do two good things at once. You'll provide meals to those facing hunger in your area, and you'll help keep the programming coming here on WPR. WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
34 more pledges. Who else would talk about the meteor? We had this great conversation.
That was a rhetorical question, wasn't it?
Yes. It was just so interesting, wasn't
yeah,
it? What we talk about is so interesting all the time.
Even the pledge phone number, 888-202-25, even that's interesting.
Make it even more interesting. Go ahead, John.
Make a pledge, WPR.org.
There you go.
888-202-2552.
Thank you, John Munson,
You're
with
welcome.
Us. Again, it's 888-202-2552 or go to WPR.org. Thank you. Thanks to Ellen Pesch for being with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Katie Madsen for on-air production. Tomorrow, we're going to hear the story of Rodriguez. If you don't know this story, you are going to be so uplifted. It's one of the best stories I've heard in years. Great conversations ahead.